Forget trying to keep up with AI. It's moving too fast. It's time to think differently about it. Welcome to the AI Readiness Project, hosted by Kyle Shamim and Ann Murphy. They're here to help you build the mindset to thrive in an AI-driven world and prepare for what's next.
Ann Murphy.
Oh, Shannon. Uh-oh.
Apparently we had some looping issues.
Well, that sound is so groovy, and it just keeps getting groovier and groovier.
I know.
People might want to enjoy it.
Exactly. Well, but they can listen to it again in the outro.
I've got
music for the outro. So, welcome. Yeah. From what I understand, you are not at your home base.
I'm not at my home base. My background is decidedly more boring here than it is at home.
Decidedly beige.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're in Utah. We're outside Salt Lake City. So We are, just if anyone's wondering, we are, my husband, aka business partner, and I are touring different spaces for the She Leads AI inaugural conference in October.
Ooh,
so we're just trying to find, yeah, isn't that awesome? So we're just trying to find the perfect spot for all of us together.
That's fantastic. Well, so that's a good segue. So so welcome to the AI Readiness Project. This is episode number 2. I'm really excited. We've got Josh Houston we're going to bring up at the bottom of the hour, which now you know what that means.
I do. Bottom of the hour for everybody is at the 30-minute mark, because it's the bottom of the clock.
of the circle.
Yeah,
but if you weren't thinking analog clock, it makes no sense. but the AI Readiness Project is sponsored by the AI Salon, by She Leads AI, and by the AI Readiness Training Program, and that is going to be launching very soon. We're very excited about that, we're off to the races here.
So, Kyle, how AI ready are you right now?
Well, so let me tell you, how AI ready. Okay, let's see. I'm coming up against something this week. and here's what I'm coming up against. I've got someone from work is out sick, which is fine. That happens. But the person that's out happens to be the person that does like the tactical execution of what we do at Storyvine. And I'm the only other one in the company that knows how to do that. And so I haven't done this for like 4 years. So I was thinking confidently, oh, it'll be just like riding a bike. No, it's not. It is not like riding a bike at all. It's absolutely miserable just trying to get back in the headspace of doing the tactical stuff. So here's how that's related to AI. I've used ChatGPT a little bit to help me figure out XML and some of the stuff that I used to know how to do. But what I've discovered is, because I'm in kind of this panic of like, I got to get it done, that I'm not instinctively defaulting to AI. I'm instinctively defaulting to must use gray matter, must get stressed out, must, right? And that feels like that's a level that I need to, at some point I will level up to when sort of panic sets in. The first thing I'll do is go to AI rather than resorting back to gray matter. So for me, the ready for AI thing is kind of realizing that as much as I talk about this stuff and as much as I use it, it's not an instinctive thing for me yet.
Yeah. I can totally relate to that. Like, you know, understanding how we work under stress or strain or like travel or limited time, lots of deadlines, difficult people, et cetera. Like, we have our ways of integrating AI into our lives when everything is just like cruising right along. But it's different. And like, for me, when I get stressed, I often fall into like the brute force mode of I can figure it out. I can do it. It's me versus the world. Poor me. But the other thing I do is I try to like logic my way through things, and I'll think about it and I can't figure it out. And it's because I'm under stress.
Right.
But what I've been doing it, and I'll say to myself, you are not going to logic your way out of this. You can continue looping this thought, Anne. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Maybe by some miracle, you will logic your way out of this. But typically it's because I have tunnel vision. Mm-hmm. But AI can bust us out of our tunnel vision so easily, just deftly, right? So if I put a
if you use it, do you like when you go into tunnel vision, like, are you using it? Are you going there?
Only like this week, because I got to like a zenith of stress and I was like, something, what is my escape hatch? Right. Like, so I did, what I did was I rode my Peloton while talking to ChatGPT. I figured one of these two MF-er things is going to work, either exercise or talking to ChatGPT. I'm not sure which one, but yeah, I do use it. I just, you know, I have to like, yeah, it's just, it's not always the first go-to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Under stress.
Is it just ChatGPT that you use? Are there custom GPTs that you use? Like, what are your things that are now part of your life?
Custom GPTs, but more so lately is projects within ChatGPT. So the reason why projects works for me is because it's easy. It's so fast to build them. Mm-hmm. And projects, for those, if anyone hasn't used them yet, in ChatGPT, on the left-hand side bar, you can press a little plus button. Mm-hmm. It pops up projects and you just start loading documents about something. And then you can configure, you know, how you want it to interact with you and what you want the output to look like. Because when I'm under stress, I only want to do about like 30% of complete on any type of, you know, gesture, project, anything. So I can throw a bunch of documents in there and then I can use like half-hearted prompts. And at least I'm in the sphere, you know, I'm in the ballpark of mm-hmm. the topic that I'm talking about. And then I can just, you know, like mildly direct it and we're getting somewhere faster. So I use projects all the time.
Is projects like Notebook LM?
Yeah. I mean, it's like custom GPT without any of the instructions or configurations. It just the knowledge base.
Oh, I see.
Creating a sub knowledge base.
Do you put old chats in it as well or just uploaded documents?
Sometimes I find myself pretty lazy about putting old chats back into anything. I don't know why. But I'll just upload like just all but a whole bunch of relevant documents, kind of create a little world, and then I'm in it and I'm just going back and forth with it within that small topic, and that helps so much.
Huh. That's fascinating. That's fascinating.
You don't do that? You don't use projects?
Because they had a bad interface bug, I just haven't gotten in the habit of it, where I wanted to populate it with all my old chats. And if you search for your old chats, you can't add the chats to a project from the search results.
Oh, you can or can't?
You cannot.
Yeah.
In the web version, which is the main one that I use. I have discovered since that if you use the desktop version of ChatGPT, it does do that. And the mobile version does it.
Oh.
But the web version doesn't. But because of that, I never, like, it, you know what this is like? It's like little baby chicks that imprint on the wrong mother. You know,
yes.
It's like I never imprinted on projects. And so,
yeah.
Like, I see it sitting there and like, yeah, I'll get to that at some point. I'll deal with that someday. I'll learn that someday. And I just don't use it.
Well, what I love that I just learned from you is how it evidently including previous chats is important. And I never do that ever.
Yeah. Well, I have a couple of projects like Sydney, the musical project I'm working on. I've probably got 20 or 30 chats where that thing was born. Right.
Yeah.
And I want them all in one place.
Ooh, yeah. So,
but it's, again, it's one of these things where it's like the setup requires, I mean, you and I are both, you know, triple laminated card carrying members of the ADHD club. And so like having that, you know, that 45 minutes of planning to get something set up, you know, the stars have to align and all that sort of stuff, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if all of the listeners and viewers have heard, but Kyle organized his tabs on his desktop recently, and that's a big flex.
I don't like to brag, but you know, they're organized and I can open them and close them. And
so that just kind of helps everybody understand how challenging it is to stop what you're doing and set up a project or a custom GPT. But even for me, when I'm going 100 miles an hour, I find it worth it to set up a project. And oftentimes when I do it, I find that most of the documents are in my current downloads anyway, because I'm in the middle of working on it.
Yeah, exactly. We have some people joining in. We've got Joy Purdy is here.
Hi, Joy.
Vicky's driving. We have a don't drive distracted, Vicky. Pay attention.
Don't drive distracted.
I know we're beautiful, but don't look at us.
Yes.
And then
hurt your eyes.
Nate St. Pierre. We're in the background for Nate. We're just, maybe he's napping or something like that. You know.
You shall learn by subconscious osmosis. Yes, you shall, Nate.
Exactly. Well, hey everybody, welcome. Where I'm finding when I'm in kind of high stress, high anxiety mode, I'm using ChatGPT in just short little bursts.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, I gotta go. I just need an answer to this. Or who's that person? I'm using it. It's not quite as bad as just doing a quick Google search. It's a step beyond that, but not much beyond that, right?
Yeah.
I'm just going in and like, tell me something. Give me an answer here, and then I'm going back to it. And I think part of that is I don't have a really clear set of AI tools that I use on a regular basis. Again, I feel like that's going to be something that over time will kind of settle into our main tools, and I just haven't done that yet.
Yeah. I have, and I actually was thinking the other day that maybe I have done so too much, because I was talking to this group of people who said, you know, what do you recommend? How do you manage the overwhelm? And I always say, get to know one tool really, really well, and then ping pong around and see, is there something that happens to be better? And most likely for most users, it doesn't matter.
Yep.
But then somebody reminded me how important it is to have a glancing knowledge of several, because there are going to be days like recently when ChatGPT has been so dim.
It's been so slow too.
Oh my God. I'm so annoyed right now. Where you're going to want to be over on. Yeah, I know. Aren't we so spoiled? We're like, oh my God, it's so slow. And it's not that smart. It only knows all the things in the world.
Exactly.
My bad.
It can solve any problem you have in, you know, 30 seconds, but you know, today it's taken 45 seconds.
Yeah. You know what? I want to give you an example recently that came up. Of how like sometimes ChatGPT can really allow us to do things that we don't know how to do. So one thing I said I would absolutely positively never do, no matter what, come hell or high water, would be plan a conference.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got quotes from conference planners. And I thought,
nothing like a ridiculous quote to motivate you to do some work, huh?
Right? Where I was like, oh, remember how I always say that ChatGPT helps you do things you don't know how to do? Well, I guess we're going to become conference planners right now. So yesterday, Donnie and I were sitting in the Airbnb before going down to one of the hotels to check it out. And we said, okay, we need a guide, a quick start guide on how do we sound smart talking to the people at the conferences, at the conference centers, so we don't ask questions where they know we're rubes, right? We're going to act like we do this all the time.
Yeah.
So it was really helpful. You know, we learned a lot of the vocabulary, and it's not like we're going from zero, but you know, so we started to put some of that together. However, listen to what ChatGPT did not tell us. ChatGPT did not tell us that when you sign up for a conference, if you're the person who's saying, we're going to do our conference here, you sign a contract that your people are going to buy a certain number of hotel rooms and you pay for it yourself.
Whoa.
You pay for it. That's and you a start big risk. Paying immediately. How did ChatGPT not tell me that?
Wow. Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. But this, you know, this is one of those weird things where it is remarkable until it's not. Like doing real work with AI is where you find the real misses.
The real misses, yeah.
And the real misses, like if you looked at that, what it output, I'm sure it was really impressive.
It was impressive.
But yeah. Then you find that out and you're like, ah, okay, yeah. So still not quite there. That's
big. Big honking deal to know ahead of time that I was going to need to be prepared to say how many hundreds of hotel rooms would my company personally say we're going to sell out in order to have this conference there. So wow. Yeah, but, and then you get these zingers where you're like, you know what? Sometimes you actually do have to like have the actual lived experience with something.
Yeah. Well, and it's also the kind of thing where it's like, you know, seeing pictures of the place and seeing it in person are two fundamentally different things as well. So,
yes.
All right. So let's move on to our next segment. What is one thing we should pay attention to this week? So there were some news items that were interesting. One of them was ChatGPT 4.5 is now available to ChatGPT Plus users. So $20 a month, you get access to the new model. The new model is really good at EQ, not IQ. It's not as good as some of the other models benchmark-wise, but it's very good at that kind of emotional intelligence stuff. But that's going to be a subtle benefit for some people. So I was going to talk about that, but here's the thing that I was struck with. We did the AI salon last night, and we had a gentleman named Brian Piper, who's a professor at the University of Rochester. And he came in and his talk was about, you know, using AI to give you superpowers. And when he came in, what he started talking about was GPTs, custom GPTs. And, you know, this is how you and I, why we're doing this right now is the custom GPTs. And when he started talking, my initial instinct was, oh, this is old news. And I'm, you know, I don't need to pay attention to this. Right. And then as he talked about them with a confidenceness and assuredness of how valuable they were. And the first thing he did was he said that the first example that he talked about was, he goes, between my wife and I, we have 6 kids, so there's 8 of us to feed. And so the first thing I did when I learned about custom GPTs was I made this meal planner. And it's like the Culinary Crafter or something like that. And it plans his meals and it creates, you know, shopping lists for him in the order of the store that he shops in. Nice. And he spent like, you know, a good 5 minutes talking about this one GPT, this one use case that, on the surface, is this mundane thing that if you're sort of like me, like living into the future, you're like, oh yeah, well yeah, you could do grocery lists, that's a parlor trick, you know, I used to talk, and I'm like, no, this is making this guy's life better. He's able to spend more time with his kids because he's good. So I think a thing to pay attention to this week is think back to the early days of AI. What were the things that were really mind-blowing back then that you've since kind of, you know, let drift away? And just get reacquainted with how powerful even the really basic features are. And custom GPTs are not really basic, but they're fairly straightforward. And we've, you know, like the luster's come off them a bit. So for me, that was the thing that really struck me is that there is so much value in the stuff that isn't the super sexy stuff.
Yeah. Well, okay. So with 4.5 coming out, here's what I'm excited about among other things, but the EQ component is really exciting to me. And I'm going to like weave in, I was listening to a podcast with one of our friends, Suzanne Welker-Jurgens. She was being interviewed by Michelle Muncy-Silva on Empowered by AI. And you know how much we love Suzanne for all the reasons we love her, but in particular, because she has this problem first approach to working with AI. It's what is the problem that you're actually trying to solve? Yep. You want to be efficient, figure that out first, right? Yep. Like, give yourself a minute, figure out what you're actually trying to solve for. And so I layered that into, I've been thinking about how I've been using ChatGPT and other AI quite a bit with the on the topic of gaslighting, because I am very easily gaslit or gaslighted, however that would be said. It's very easy for me to not know whether something is really happening or really happened, or the person is saying it happened. Yeah. It's just part of my upbringing is now here I am at my big age, and I still sometimes don't know fact from fiction. So I use ChatGPT a lot for that, but now that it's going to have this additional layer of EQ, I'm even more excited about like, is there another level I can go to in my understanding of like how I perceive the world around me and gaslighting, where maybe someday I won't be asking ChatGPT, A happened, did it mean B or C or nothing? Yep. Maybe I'm actually going to get better at this now that ChatGPT is going to be better at it.
Yeah, and I think ChatGPT has always been good. Like it is decently human in its response, but like when you ask for things like, you know, explain something to me, it gives it to you in this very cold kind of bullets and things like that. And now it's got this more kind of human kind of thing, like how someone would talk to you about something.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be important. Are there still custom GPTs that you've made that you still use?
Oh yes. I could not live without
it. Anyway, this is a comment from Nate. It's almost a promise of U-Bots, which is the company he just launched, where talking about the problem first and then, you know, figure out how to solve it, right? That's what they've done with U-Bots. Yeah. So that's great. So tell me about what are the GPTs that you still use?
So one of them that I use 5 times a day is it's called Important Meeting Follow-Up Machine or something like that. Really super sexy stuff. Yeah. It's got fantastic branding. Listen, it's better than OpenAI's branding. So
yeah, really.
I mean, it's not a very high bar, but what it does is it takes my meeting recorder transcript, flows them in there. I create notes in 3 different ways. One, you know, just a summary. One is for my CRM, and one is for just very, very focused on sales. So every mention of money, timelines, scope, you know, all these keywords. But then it turns it into an email. And the reason why this email is important to me is because it has my perfect structure of a follow-up email that I know works, that if I leave it to my own devices, I'm always going to forget one of the most important things in there, which is to ask the person, how would you like me to follow up? Right? If I leave it to my own devices, I'm always going to forget. But because it's in the custom GPT, it's always in there, period, at a discussion. And then it gives me my to-do list to delegate or to do myself. And it takes this 90-minute process down to, you know, 7 minutes, 6 minutes, 5 minutes. And so, yeah, I couldn't live without that.
Wow, that's amazing. Have you updated the custom instructions, or have you set it and forget it?
Set it and forget it. I know that there were a few times where ostensibly we were supposed to go in and update it. I just didn't, and it's still working fine.
Yeah, it was funny. I worked with Nate St. Pierre, who's on the call, on one of his GPTs, and he hadn't used it in a while, and we went in to use it, and it was not behaving the way he expected it to. He was not happy. But we got our way through it. We prompted our way through it. But yeah, if OpenAI changes the models, it can break some stuff. So absolutely.
Do you think that my mansplaining detector GPT is going to be smarter with 4.5?
Actually, that would be a really good thing to test. I don't know that. I mean, since 4.5 is so new and it's so big, you probably can't use it in a custom GPT, is my instinct. But what I would say is take all the prompts that you put in that thing And yeah, it broke. Nate said his GPT broke.
It broke.
That's awesome. What were we talking
Josh,
about?
Josh says his claim to fame in AI is that he has prompts that are 3 years old and still working.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, the mansplaining thing. I would say pull all those prompts out now that you have access to 4.5 and see if it's better at it. Maybe it is. I haven't quite figured out what is special about GPT that's really distinct from 4.5 than what's distinct from 4.0. It's something I want to do, but I think it's going to really require some digging, and kind of like you discovered with the venue, you know,
yeah,
research that you did. I think it's going to be stuff like that that we'll discover it over time.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about who's behind this show.
Yeah.
So I'll talk first about the AI Salon. So if you are looking for community of people who are optimists about AI and curious about it and adventurous about it and super generous and super nice and super talented, that's what the AI Salon is. So mm-hmm. if you have not joined the AI Salon, go to thesalon.ai. You can read about it, but scroll down, click join our community, and that'll take you over to our community site and introduce yourself there. And it's a remarkable group. We've got, you know, clubs and hubs and, you know, sort of smaller sub communities in there. You can really get to know people. We just started a new thing. I don't even know if you know this, Ann. We started a new thing called LOLs, learn out louds. And they're lulls.
For Gen X.
But a learn out loud session is just anyone who wants to teach something can do it. And so last weekend, Vicky and Kelly Camp and Lori Ryan taught lovable.dev, the no code thing.
Oh, nice.
And then on Sunday, Joy Purdy taught video editing using DaVinci Resolve. Nice. And so it's a new thing that we're starting within the salon. To allow people to kind of step into a leadership position, but allow yeah. other people to learn what other people have learned. So really excited. So come join the salon. And
well, first of all, we should confab on that because we do member jams, which are the same thing.
Oh.
And so
yeah, we should.
We should put our people on a circuit. They do to you guys and then they come over and they do us. Exactly.
Or just swap out the graphics.
Yeah. But honestly, I mean, what you're talking about is what's so critical in the learning, doing, teaching cycle is like, that is so much of how I've learned how to yeah. use AI is by teaching it to other people.
Yep.
And this is the perfect example of why being in a community is the best way to learn AI.
Yep.
It's because you're able to learn stuff from other totally relatable humans, just like you, going through the same stuff. They're not even remotely coming in and saying, I'm the expert. You meet me where I am, right? They're saying, you know, I just figured this out. I'm going to tell you what I figured out. I'm the fifth grader to the fourth graders.
Yep.
So there, I need to talk to all three of them about coming and talking about Lovable with our groups.
Okay.
So She Leads AI, our mission is to unite accomplished women to advance AI for global prosperity. And although that mission unto itself is incredibly important and heavy duty, we certainly have a lot of fun inside our group. One of our members, Kay Stoner, is teaching us how to create these teams of personas, and a couple of our members aren't able to make it. So they decided they will have a St. Patrick's Day / AI persona rewatch. They're going to rewatch the replay together and drink green beer and have popcorn. Like this awesome. is what it's come to. These are the things we say now.
That's awesome.
So, so we do a few things in She Leads AI. One is we have an academy. So we do AI education. We have a consulting agency. So we work mostly with small, medium-sized businesses, nonprofit serving and otherwise. And we have a public affairs and advocacy group that works in all spaces that we've never been in before, where we get to be at the table helping decision makers. And importantly, we have the She Leads AI Society, where it's a group of women who are at various stages in their AI journeys, some super, super ballers, some people who are newer to the scene. And it's extremely active on our Mighty Networks.
No,
like
great.
We're there. We just created, did you guys have an Unstuck or Get Unstuck channel? Something like that. Maybe I learned that from the AI exchange. So we just started a Get Unstuck channel so that you can go in there and get basically a help desk from
That's awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, anyway. Yeah.
So we have Ask for Help.
Ask for Help. Okay. Yeah. Same.
Yeah,
so
okay.
You have your own help desk. We also have an awe channel for your cute pets.
Nice.
And then we have, anyway, all of our events. So that's at sheleadsai.ai.
Yeah. There you go. And then this podcast came out of, really out of AI Festivus, but out of that came a lot of people asking for, hey, I want training on how to get my head around this AI stuff. And so we're developing right now. We're a little behind on launching it, but if you want to learn about the program, we've created an AI readiness training program. So if you go to areyoureadyforai.com, they're the ones that are bringing you this, and that will be launching soon. So go sign up there. And as soon as it's ready to go, you'll be the first one to know. All right. So with that, I am super excited. We're bringing it. Well, you know what's been cool is Josh. Let's bring up Josh. Josh has been backstage this whole time. And as we're talking, he's nodding, he's commenting. He's absolutely the best. So Josh Houston, Ann, why don't you tell people about Josh? You know him really good. I think he's awesome, but you work with him a lot. So
I think it's pretty awesome of me that I so generously share Josh with you guys.
Because exactly.
Let me start my introduction of Josh by saying how awesome I am for sharing him with all of you. And he's he's back by popular demand. But Josh was one of the first people I met in my the earnest part of my AI journey, and has been an incredible influence. What's this? Oh, sorry. My tumbler.
We gotta hydrate.
Hydrate or dehydrate. Josh has been incredibly important in my AI journey, and one of the things that I've learned from him really is how to meet people where they're at. And I've watched Josh like flirt with the curse of knowledge that so many of the AI thought leaders succumb to, and then like realize that in serving the people you want to serve, there's a different mentality about it. And that's just one of the many things I've learned from Josh, but including I should mention that a lot of my technical skills, which are exactly what they need to be, not anything more, not anything less. That's me not apologizing for my technical skills. Much of those come from Josh as well. So
that's Josh. Awesome. So Josh, welcome.
We're so glad you're here.
Hi, y'all.
Hello. There we go.
Are you trying to put Josh up? There we go.
I am. Put Josh up. Well, very good to see you. So Josh, tell us a little bit about you. And to make you a little more uncomfortable, one of the things that really impressed me when we did AI Festivus and just getting to know you during that is just how down to earth you are and how grounded you are and how wise you are. And then I found out how young you are. You don't have to reveal your age, but you're just like a whippersnapper. You're like in the neighborhood of where my kids are age-wise. And let me tell you, you're in a whole different league than what I got going on. I think one of the things that I really like about the AI community, both AI Salon and She Leads AI and just, everything that we're kind of circling around here, is it really doesn't matter how old anyone is. There's a certain spirit and focus and generosity, and you really embody that. So with that, welcome. And tell us who you are. Tell us what you're about. Tell us what's going on.
Sweet. Thank you again. Wow. So many warm intros. I'm like, great. I'm 28, by the way. Not that old, not that young. Okay. So who am I, if we haven't met yet? I am a person who helps people figure out how to get good with AI. Mm-hmm. And we do that by taking a really simple approach. And you said it earlier, we help people figure out how to use one AI tool really, really well in a way that will save them hours a day. And basically for the past 3 to 5 years, I've been focused on helping people change the way that they work. Before AI, it was through tech and just SaaS and doing integrations, automation, that sort of thing. But as the AI era has come to a, you know, here we are, a lot of things have changed and the way that people work is starting to be challenged. And to your point about like the AI community and like everybody that we kind of bump into in this AI adoption sphere, I think people are so like generous and kind and like inclusive because we're optimists. Like we believe the best in people. And we also believe that like it can get better. And right. I think that's like a really good combination of traits to like get along with people. And many people that I've met in the space are just so like open-handed with like, hey, I figured this thing out. I'd love to share it with you.
Yeah.
And not so gatekeepy. And there's always those people, but like those people don't really hang out and help people. So the people we bumped into are great.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. What were you doing before?
Before I was into AI and in tech, I worked in consulting. So I have a background in business strategy, specifically helping companies figure out their branding, their brand strategy, that sort of thing. But I formally studied people and HR in school. So that's always been like my kind of nerdy, like organizational design, instructional, like, or institutional, like strategy, that sort of thing. Which I thought when I moved to tech would not translate, but then now if you fast forward to a few years ago when I thought that to now, I'm realizing like that it's super relevant because a lot of the work that we do is helping people change the way that they work. And when we work with leadership, we're helping them redesign how their organization functions by looking at their human capital, equipping those people with better tooling and training to get going, and ultimately shifting tasks around from like person to person or person to tech, person to AI. So it's kind of smack dab in the middle of what I used to obsess over in like organizational innovation with HR.
Right.
I just didn't get to do that in my HR work, which was unfortunate.
Well, sorry, did you have something in?
Nope, go for it.
One of the things that I've been thinking a lot about, and I'm curious because you seem to be on the front lines with this, is that who might be the most valuable employees in a business today with high skills might not be the most valuable in using these AI tools. And the ones you might overlook might be really good with the AI. How are you finding the difference between sort of skill focus and aptitude focus, for lack of a better term, or, you know, people that are sort of AI ready that might not have the skills, the current business might not value them. What's been your experience on sort of who to keep, who to, you know, sort of push forward into this AI world and who might not be as good at it?
Yeah, I think the perspective we take is that like everybody has their role to play, like from top to bottom, leadership to like the frontline employees. And everybody's responsible for developing intuition skills around AI in the same way that they're responsible for developing skills around like tech in general. Like we help people become more tech savvy, not more technical. And there's a lot of people who will approach AI from just a technical perspective. You know, the AI agents people, the AI automation folks,
right.
The like technologists. But then there's this whole 99% of everybody else that's just people doing work. And I think aptitude is really easy to deter. Like it's really easy to figure out if someone has the aptitude for AI just based off of how they interact with being tech savvy in other areas. Like, are they comfortable with using keyboard shortcuts, or do they curl up in a ball if presented with a spreadsheet? Like, how do you manage your email? How do you show up to meetings? Are you comfortable with hybrid? There's things that everybody's familiar with and like more or less comfortable. We find people that are really struggling with AR, the same people who are like, I'm not learning Excel because I retire in 10 years, or I'm not going to do that because I'm a creative.
So people, like a lack of curiosity?
Definitely. Because there's not really like the entry point of like who can open up an AI tool and get something out of it. There's not like any one group of people or one job series that I would say is like, oh yeah, this type of person can't get it. Like I think everybody, and we've seen, like, we work with people from all walks of the organization, from HR to finance to accounting to marketing to, you name it, operations, leadership. Everybody has their own definition of what, like, AI means for them. Once they, and the more that they understand about it, will determine kind of like what their AI aha moment is, which is something we all have had. I think it's one of the questions you have here is like, what was the first big, like, AI thing for you, right? We see people have their moments in real time, like every day when we're working with them. And it's fascinating different how different people like get there, right? Some people just need to see.
Yeah. Something. It's a thing about like how the first thing that's really relevant to them or something like that. What is the commonality across those aha moments that you see?
Yeah, there's the progression for AI intuition that we've seen pretty consistently is that, like, I can show you something cool, and some people, that's enough. They're like, wow, I'm sold.
Oh, interesting.
Like, AI's for me. Some people are skeptical. They're like, well, like we hear this all the time from, like, some of the finance folks. Well, I'm a finance officer. I'm a loan officer at a bank. Like, how's AI going to help? Like, ChatGPT isn't for me. And then we show them they sit in on a session where we're coaching, like, one of the team members or someone else in their org. They're like, I'm a fly on the wall. This isn't for me, but, you know. And then by the end of that hour, they're like, wait a second. So you're telling me I could put in this CSV file and it could visualize the data? And I'm like, yes. Yes, I'm telling you that. Like, you had a big ego when we started, and now you're very curious. And that point to I think the universal, like, the curiosity of, can AI help me do something productive?
Yeah.
That's the moment.
Yeah.
And from then on, depending on their aptitude or their willingness to try something they don't quite understand, that's generally a factor that will determine how fast and how far they get on their own.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Josh, what was that moment for you where you had your aha and you were like, I got to go all in on AI? And then what happened as a result of that?
Yes. So before I was like in my brand strategy world, learning, like, I had done consulting before that, and I was learning the brand side of consulting. I was trained on marketing by a really bad marketer. Like, that was he was my boss. He was in charge of teaching, and he was digital. And everything I learned, it felt like I was in the Twilight Zone. I was like, oh my God, how is this guy the boss? But everything he's doing doesn't work. Like, meaning, like, the metrics and the data, we're not growing. We're killing social channels at an agency. It was like, we're killing all the social channels that we're managing. Like, our engagement's at zero. We are flatlined on performance, but we're getting paid. Like, so I left that position in that company feeling really confused about, like, well, I know marketing is important and it's necessary. And obviously these companies that were our clients value it, but, like, we're getting away with murder over here. Like, we're getting nothing done. And my first aha moment was ChatGPT, going to ChatGPT and saying, begging it, can you please help me understand what the hell marketing is? Because I don't get it.
Everything
I know is backwards. And this was, like, back in the GPT-3 era when it first launched in November 22. I got to learn from ChatGPT, which at that point, my understanding of the AI was, this is the average sum of the information on the internet about this thing. So I had done all this research on social media channels, and my old, like, boss, when he trained me, been like, go look at this guy, watch this guy on YouTube, look at this, look at that, read this blog. You know, it's very chaotic, the approach. And when I went to the AI, I felt a sense of peace knowing that, like, at least I'm getting the most average. And then that was my first, like, aha moment. The second one that really made it unlock for me and made me trust it more was realizing that if this is the average, ChatGPT has been trained on the best marketing and the worst marketing, and I need to ask it, what's the difference? And then I started to explore that, like, what is the difference between really, really great marketers and really great copywriters, and then, like, the nuance of all these different facets. And I learned there's facets. It's like, oh, marketing is, like, an umbrella, and then there's, like, SEO and copy and ads and you name it, positioning, brand, like, all this stuff that I had been super, like, confused about because I had been trained so poorly, and I didn't have a what's the source of truth to go verify what I'm doing. I just trusted it and took it for what it was. ChatGPT helped me undo all of that and then rebuild it to be like, oh, I can actually definitively understand what SEO is, not just like
talking. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Did it confirm your instincts about the boss guy?
Yeah. I asked, is it normal for us to, like, take over managing a social media account for a client and then drive it to zero comments on average per month? Like, is that good marketing? Like, is it normal for us to do personal branding for people to get zero like likes? Like,
is this bad?
Right. Like that comparison, that's literally, I was like desperate to try and find this out. I was like curious. And I was like, for my own sanity, I was grappling with the fact that I feel like I spent a year learning backwards, like the wrong thing. Like, man, I'm really tired of like having to chalk this up to like, man, my understanding of this realm, which is a whole chunk of business, like marketing is important, but like I learned the wrong way to do it. So yeah. I'm just trying to fix that. But then that helped me understand that I can trust it. And it got me really curious. And what I then chose to do is like, well, I super duper don't want to be a marketer because that's not what I set out to be in my career. So I learned how to build with the APIs and started learning no code automation more because I had done some of that with the marketing / advisory services we've done, but I was never the implementation. I was never the guy doing it. And I was like, I would love to learn how this stuff goes together, because I think if AI is really good at knowing information and generating ideas, we can orchestrate it knowing information and generating ideas against the consulting frameworks that I've been building and delivering. Yeah. And that was when I really figured out that like, this has super business application because I created a tool that did my old job, but in 10 minutes for $2.
Yeah. That like, thing of like, once you get the basic structure of an automation that, you know, there's an input, it does some stuff and there's an output. Like once you get that, and then realizing that it does some stuff with an LLM, with you know, ChatGPT, it can do a lot, right? And so so this relatively simple structure can accomplish like really remarkable stuff. That's amazing. I love that you were the consultant first and then, you know, took all of the piece parts of that and just rolled it into this.
Yeah.
I have to chime in on something about Josh. And why people should learn from you. I've been having this, like, I've just been like listening and like watching you talk about not only, okay, on one hand, how you onboarded yourself into an entire field.
Yeah.
Right. You're like, something's weird. Something's not computing, but I have a way to figure this out. So I'm going to like onboard myself as a newbie, learning what marketing is all about, confirming what I thought, just making decisions based on that. And I've seen the way that you onboard AI tools. You are like the best I know at teaching AI how to do things the way that you want it to do, to coordinate and collaborate the best on a project. Like Kyle, he's like the opposite of the two of us. He like actually has like structure and a plan.
Yeah. I don't go that. I don't roll that way. But you know,
right? Yeah.
You do what you do, Josh.
Yeah. You do you. But his way is better. As a matter of fact, it just turns out that it is. And like, if I think about how you've taught me and how I know you teach people you work with, it's like you just have a great approach to starting with what is common sense and relevant and useful and like tactile, and then adding on layers to the point that you need to, but not overfitting something. So helpful, because I don't need to know the extra right now. I just need to be able to do the thing. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that you have an awesome way of learning things, and I've learned so much from that.
Thanks, Ann.
That's
awesome. Well, so let's move, we'll move on to question number two. So question number two is about you. So what have you discovered about yourself or rediscovered about yourself because of AI? This is a fascinating journey that you went on. I think going from like, I think my boss is full of shit to discovering it. And then this path is it's a really amazing path. But so what have you learned about yourself?
I think there's, the big thing I've learned about myself through AI tools and like using them is I don't have to be the person who knows it all. Like that's something I've always like, especially coming from consulting, like it's my job to provide ideas to people, to like be the mansplain, to like just be the person with the answer. Right. That was my job for years. And the thing that I've learned, especially working and talking to LLMs, is like, it doesn't have to be the me as the person who's got all the knowledge and information, but I have to be good at asking questions. And that's like true probably in all relationships. Like I really should be taking this you know, note out of my book and applying it to other parts of my life more. Like, in work especially, it's helping me, like, I feel like a sense of relief knowing that, like, I don't have to be the one that's like that has it all going on. I know I could just like lean back on some of my tooling for that. But it's helped me understand that it is my job to figure out how to be curious and ask better questions and definitely like not assume stuff, because the assumptions, you can watch an LLM make assumptions and trend and hallucinate or just like sound really dumb because it's just like using jargon. Like, I don't let my AI use consulting jargon or business jargon or AI jargon. That's just not allowed. We can't do it. It doesn't help. It assumes too much. And so in our marketing materials and all of our custom projects and all of our instruction files, we have to like consistently remind the AI and therefore myself that like, it is not my job to sound smart. It is my job to deliver great questions, facilitate good ideas happening, and like ultimately like not just accept whatever comes out. Like, there's always a chance to do something a little bit better. And that's what we try to help people understand when they're working with AI. But for me personally, I've gone through that journey myself. Like, in my startup jargony word of the day is like, we dog food. Like, we eat our own. Yeah. We eat our own stuff.
How much? Sorry, go ahead, Ann.
No, I was just gonna say, yeah, the ability to. I mean, at times it's like just take out the jargon in order to be relatable and accessible. Like, I do feel like it's our responsibility, for those of us who've had the luxury and the freedom and the privilege to spend 24/7, you know, for the past X number of years in this, immersed in this world, like, we have a responsibility to meet people where they are, to actually be the helpful ones. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's going to be just not talking like a consultant.
Yeah. It's fun to talk like a consultant too. Like, I'm going to go back through my deep research. I did this thought pattern with AI, and it's really fun to do if you are watching this and want to try it. Like, ask AI to help you understand the continuum of knowing jargon about a thing versus like when you, I see it as a bell curve. Like, when you first start to get to know something,
it's all like, jargon.
Yeah, you don't have the jargon. You don't know. You don't have the insider lingo. So you just like say it plainly. You're like, I want AI to help me do my job better.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and then you like learn all the consulting words. You're like, we help people strategically implement the right optimized solution for their bullshit, blah, blah, blah. And you like, you start sounding like a robot, and then you get really smart and you start to learn more. And then you're like, oh, yeah, we help people get good with AI.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. Right? Like, that's where we landed. It's like, and it kind of sounds like it's a toot your horn, because like, oh, I feel like I've grown up enough to not have to say like strategic implementation and that bullshit. But like, truly, it's not helpful to people. And so you're closer than you think when you start, and then you get like lost in the woods, and then you like see the clearing, and you're like, oh yeah, it was just about cutting a clear path for the next guy.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Can you unpack for me this idea of the question, the ask better questions? It's a thing that I keep coming up against, that if you're good at that, you're going to be good at AI, just period. Mm-hmm. Like, what's the percentage of people that you work with that like, but that's also kind of an uncomfortable place, right? If you're in the place of asking better questions, you have to be in a place of, I don't know all the answers, right? Yeah. Like there's a letting go that has to happen. I'm just curious, like, real world in these businesses, like, what is that balance of who's willing to really ask questions like that?
Yeah, I think it helps to like baseline of like the relationship we hold to the work we have. And one like thought exercise we do with everyone we work with, we have one method that we do. Like, we teach people how to use one tool with one methodology. And our method is like, keep it simple, use context files to tell the AI what it needs to know. And then like, you don't have to do prompt frameworks or prompt engineering or anything hard.
Great.
So it's just offloading the cognitive load to the AI, which it's better at than us. Yeah. So in order to get someone like comfortable with that whole like process and like accepting that the AI is probably going to help them in a better way than they can imagine, we'll like strip it back to be like, we are people who work at a job where we get paid to make files. I get paid to make files because I talk to those people. And then I get paid to present those files and talk to them again about it. Wow. And like, truly,
that's correct.
That's my job. Yeah. And then I'm like, but you work in marketing and your job is to make files that look like social media posts and files that look like blogs and files that look like this or that or newsletters. And it's like, let's just not take us ourselves so serious.
Yeah.
But then you are really good at what you do. And if you're really good at what you do, that means you have standards. And you could probably tell me, if I tried to do what you do, that what I'm doing could be better because of your standards. So write it down. And so we help people then realize, like, what the AI needs is the stuff they already have. And we're like, yeah. AI can write like anyone. Yeah. But like, ultimately, you want it to help you make your files faster, better, so you can get on with your life. Like, you have two jobs. Everybody does. Why don't you help the AI help you do one of those jobs so you can go back down to having just one?
I love crazy, that so much.
Crazy concept. And so when you strip it down and like it kind of sounds funny to say like, oh, I'm a person who makes files and that's my job. But like, that's literally it. I talk to people. Those talks turn into files. I give those files back to them. They pay me money. Like, that's how we do business. And so yeah. The AI looks at that as pretty trivial. Like,
right.
Okay, just tell me how you want me to do the file. Just tell me the context I need to work with it. And once someone sees that, they're going to see like, because there's all these defenses that go up, like these walls.
People right.
are like, but the quality, I don't want it to sound like a robot. I have a very distinct way. I take pride in my work. I love writing. I love the creative process. It's like, great. You can package all that up into a really, really neat instruction. But like, what if you went and were sick for a month and you had to like hire an intern, or you could hire an intern to help you, like, or you had to like hand off your work to your coworker? Like, what, how would you do that? And people haven't gone through those thought exercises. And right. companies don't help people organize these things. HR offices, they haven't done this work. Leadership teams have not. The only people who remotely are close to it are like the process improvement folks, like the true like ops, like optimizers, the Six Sigmas, those type of people. But that's not sexy anymore. Like, that was 2010. But those same people in that same work is what AI needs. So it's like, it's fascinating for me being an HR guy and like going down, I went down the success path a little when I was like coming up, and it was like, yeah, we're writing down processes. We're figuring out ways to like document as much as possible so that it's written on a file. Again, if I get what I know into a file, then I can give that to the AI and it can help me write more files faster and better, right? Like, that's the whole thing. So we just try to keep that perspective with folks.
Love it.
So that they don't get lost in the sauce.
Love it.
Okay, Josh, our wrap-up question is, what does AI readiness mean to you? And what is your advice for someone starting out on their journey?
AI readiness for me means being open-minded that this thing that seems like a robot on the other side of the screen can actually be really, really helpful.
Yeah.
Like, just believing that first, like you're hearing people promise it, but like AI readiness is not just believing that or like not believing that, but like testing that, like, can it be helpful for me?
And how helpful? Yeah.
Right. Can I open up the app and make it do something? Like, I remember distinctly, like, one of my friends coming to me at, like, last year sometime, and halfway through the year, he was like, before we like do, like, we were just talking about normal stuff and not like work or AI. And he goes, can I just say something? And I was like, what? And he's like, holy crap, ChatGPT. And then he was like, I tried it 8 months ago and it was terrible. It couldn't help me and I didn't believe anything. So I just moved on. And then I came back and today it worked. And he was like, I didn't realize it was like that. That was a year ago.
Wow.
And like, so many people, how many people have had that reaction? Where like, I tried it. It didn't do something that I thought was cool. So I just like put it back in the, like, I just forgot and moved on. That's not AI ready. AI readiness is trying again.
Yes.
That's, oh, I love it. That.
That's great.
Yeah. What was the second part of that question? Sorry, I got lost.
Oh, what's your advice for someone starting the journey?
Open it and try, and then try again.
Yeah,
that's it. Play, you know, that's at the salon. It's play first.
Yeah, like, definitely.
Yeah,
just it definitely play. Is pick one thing. Like, don't get lost in the, like, if I can leave the nugget that has like been like a huge unlock for us lately. There's a few ways to do AI adoption. You can go through the research and development path and try tech. That's trying all the different platforms, testing out all the apps. That's a cool way for people who like to build stuff and tinker. Automations, agents, that stuff, there's plenty of opportunity for people to try. Everybody else needs to focus on the skills and intuition that comes from trying.
Yeah.
And you only build those skills by showing up. Like, we use the analogy of going to the gym. You could have a coach, you could have a program, you could have a diet, but if you don't go do the work, nothing happens.
Oh, that's great.
And I can't go work for you. Like, that's the other thing. I can't go and do your AI work.
You have to go.
Yeah, because you have to figure out where the boundaries are, because you're the one making those files. You know what's a good file, right? I love that thing.
That, take that to make file that forever. I just want more people to be saying like, "I am file." I say like, "I am file monkey." Like that's I create good files. Like that's because awesome. It just takes the load off. It's like, man, like I still write like 50-page roadmaps sometimes for clients, and I'm like, I'm sitting there and I'm like, I'm a good file monkey in this AI stuff. And I'm like, I can do that in a day and move on and be like, wow, that was actually good work because I took all this context, I pulled it all together, I did like, I saw this produce something better than the sum of the parts, and then I got to deliver ideas that were smarter than I could have come up with, and people think I they'll give me the credit, and I'm like, cool, my AI and I thank you.
Brilliant.
We did a great job.
Do you have anything, anything you want people to check out? Anything coming up?
Yeah. So we're officially launching Quick AI Wins. And our first main offer is helping people get really good at saving 2 to 3 hours a day with AI tools in 6 hours or less. So
do you know when it's going to launch? Because
in the next, I think it's during March. We're like so close to the website going live and our curriculum is done, but we're polishing it. And I'm stuck in the middle of making the PowerPoints for the trainings. We've tested this with a few dozen people already and had so much fun and so much, we've learned so much about people's process and these like little like patterns that we keep seeing and like people's aha moments or their big existential questions. And like,
that's great.
Anyways, we help simplify it so that you don't have to go spend thousands of hours on YouTube universities, like kind of fumbling around to figure out how to get good at making files better.
Well, let us know when it launches. We'll definitely give you a boost. So follow Josh. Josh Houston looks like Huston, but it's Houston.
Yeah, you got it.
There you go.
Awesome.
All righty, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Josh.
This was so fun.
As always.
We'll see you all, next week?
Yeah, we'll see you next week. Same bad time, same bad place. See you later, Josh.
Bye, Josh.
All right. Ann Murphy.
We've done it again.
Episode 2 in the books. You from Utah, me from here in Denver. And we're...
Look at us. Cruising right along.
Cruising right along. All right.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for watching, and we will see you next time.
See you next time.